Hello, everybody. Welcome to UGA Sports Live. My name is Roddy Nabulsi. I'm joined by Dane Young and Jim Donnan. The latter of those two is the former Georgia Bulldogs head coach and the number one reason we have a show on Tuesday afternoons at noon. We appreciate all of you joining us.
I want to clear that for you right now. I was out at David Pollock's golf tournament yesterday, and what a tremendous deal that was for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. But these two gentlemen came up to me and said how much they enjoyed our podcast and they look forward to it every week. And they said, you know, Roddy's always saying you're the reason we tune in, and said, we definitely tune in, but we like Roddy and Dane too. So I thought that.
Well, I appreciate the bones they threw us. Thank you. I mean,
they wouldn't have told me that if they didn't mean it. So I'm glad to know that the two of you guys got some, at least two people, but you know, it's always makes me feel good. Not so much that I need it, but just that we're trying to give everybody a pretty good accurate appraisal of a Georgia program, fair, like the guy on Fox News said, fair and whatever it might be, but
fair and balanced, I think is what he said.
But I thought it was good to, for you guys to realize that people are watching it more because of you two than me.
I think they're just busting your chops because they didn't want to make it all about you.
They know better than busting my chops, man. I got none left. So, but we have
a lot of questions to get through today, Coach.
Let's go for it. Let's go for it. I'm sorry for interrupting there.
No, hey, your show. A lot of questions towards in the show we'll get to. I put up a note on TikTok and they flooded in. Some interesting names up there. You people and your handles are pretty wild. And, Coach, I got some good questions to pepper you with. But last week we talked about the upcoming NFL draft, and you were, Mozam the Magnificent with your predictions going forward. You know, you remind me of Johnny Carson sitting there holding up the Karnak with the envelopes, knowing when these guys were going to get drafted. I kind of want to put this to bed because I think it's – a big deal about the kids that were drafted and what it says about the Kirby Smart era. Now, you started doing this show to, I don't say stick up for Kirby Smart, but to show what was going on in Athens, to show what was going on in the program, and you've been a great help for that. And the fact that they've had 33 players drafted in the last 3 years, 40-something, like 41 in the last 4 years, This is insane, and I just kind of want to touch on each guy real quick and kind of give your thoughts on kind of where they went, high, low, and how good of a fit it is for their team. And one of my best friends in the whole world, Todd Parmley, he's out in Las Vegas. When he saw that the Raiders were taking Brock Bowers, my phone lit up instantly. He runs a great restaurant out there called Emmett's, for Emmett Smith. It's brand new. He's like, just get me in touch with Brock. We'll feed him every night. I mean, major steakhouse. He's like, I'll take care of him. He is bouncing off the ball now that he has Zamir White and Brock Bowers again. So give me your thoughts real quick on Brock Bowers.
You know, one of the situations that happens in this draft is it's always the player of need and the best player available. And, you know, last year the Raiders took Meyer, the guy from who I thought was a really good player from Notre Dame, but he had a little injury there towards the end. But and some people are busting on the Raiders for taking, the fact that Brock is another tight end. But there comes a point as a new coach like they have in Antonio Pierce that you got to take the best player available if he's out there because he can be a difference maker. And this new general manager that came in from the Chargers has a background with the Chargers, and he's always been pretty astute at drafting. So it just amazes me, all these pundits and everybody gets after the fact grading these drafts and doing all that. It's kind of like grading the recruiting, but you definitely have some needs on your team, but you also got to look at who the player is. So I feel like that the Raiders just felt, we got a chance to get this guy, and we can pick up some other needs in the rounds that are coming up maybe. And, I think every team's got their own drafting way they do things. And that's, I'm kind of hemming and hawing here, but I would have taken Bowers as quick as I could because I knew what he could do and what he can do. And he's like a sponge for the rest of your team because of his work habits and the way he does things. And, you know, it's kind of a infectious type deal, but they'll see what all he does, and he'll be a big addition to their team.
Then they moved on to Amarius Mims. There were some questions about why did he only start 8 games, and you know, this will drop him in the draft. I don't know that he dropped too far from where they predicted him. That is a, I always say that the NFL draft's based on potential, and his potential is through the roof.
Yeah, I think more people that were projecting that about the 8 games really didn't study the tape and didn't know the background on Amarius. I mean, you know, he played behind 2 guys that were drafted. One in Jones, you know, we had one drafted by the Steelers, and then McClendon was drafted. So, but at the same time, he's just an unbelievable talent from an arms perspective. You just look at the length of his arms and his ability to pass pro. Just go back and watch the Ohio State game where he played against some really good players, and that guy couldn't even get off the line on him. I mean, he was unbelievable in that game, and I've seen it in practice, the way he blocked Smith on, you know, Nolan Smith, and got a good look at him, gets Walker and Carter. He's just and it's kind of interesting that the team that took him, the Cincinnati Bengals, and the people that watch our show know that Zach Taylor, the coach of the Bengals, used to be, my daughter used to babysit him when he was growing up. So I don't talk to him much, but I do talk to his mother through him. And
he doesn't call your daughter for personnel decisions?
No, but he asked me about Hill, and you saw what he's been able to do up there. And, but I just texted her and told her, I said, as good a player as he is, you know, he's even, to me, better person, and he'll fit in good. And I thought Coach Saban did a lot of good things on the broadcast. I listened to Daniel Jeremiah and their group more. But, you know, for him to bag on him about taking himself out of the game, he doesn't realize exactly what was wrong with the guy, and he doesn't know how bad that surgery was. And it's putting a lot of pressure on a 340-pound lineman, you know, to be and he just couldn't go. Just because you take yourself out of the game doesn't mean you're wrong. But, you know, that's his prerogative, as, you know, he knew the situation because I'm talking about Nick, he was coaching against him. But Nick's also the guy that said we weren't worried about 84 and Bowers, you know, after the first quarter. Well, what were they doing in the fourth quarter when they both called passes that – let us on that drive and put us back in the game. So I think Nick's going to be good at this stuff, but you know, he has a tendency to look at it through one way.
He should not have, and I agree with you, Nick Saban will forget today more than I'll ever know about football. But the shot against Amarius Mims taking himself out, I'm like, man, that is the biggest gift that he has been given in his career. And you're going to bag on the kid for doing that? He changed the outcome of that game. He was injured. He takes himself out. And you're going to complain about it? Come on, Nick. That's not classy. That was not classy. But Amarius Mims is classy, and I like that the Bengals said, look, we had no hesitation. We know when we send our scouts to a Georgia practice, they don't practice like anybody else, and we know we're going to see a ton of kids. They circled that date on their recruiting calendar, on their scouting calendar, excuse me. And when they go to Georgia, they basically take a bunch of notepads because there's a lot of guys to see. So I thought that was those quotes need to make their way into a recruiting pitch from the University of Georgia. Here's what the Bengals said about coming to Georgia's practice. So I thought that was nice.
Yeah, good.
Then the Chargers actually traded up, Coach.
You know, right towards the end of that first round, it was kind of an unbelievable situation because you saw the Bills trade to the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs were able to pick up that fast kid from Texas. And, you know, they're fighting for the situation every year, and everybody goes back to when they let the Chiefs, the Bills traded, and the Chiefs were able to get Mahomes, generational player. So you have a tendency to remember things like that for sure. But we saw the Bills give up that one, and then they gave up another one, and then the Panthers, you know, ended up taking Leggett. And then we saw, you know, and Leggett had a good last year, no question about it, but I don't think he did that much prior to that. But if you just think about the Panthers real quick, I'm just going to bust them a little. But if you look at all the firepower that the Chicago Bears right now have at the expense of the Panthers, when you look at Caleb Williams, Roman Adunze, Swift, Keegan Allen from the Chargers, all those guys based on draft picks and trading and everything. And the Panthers have Bryce Young. I mean, Bryce is a good player, but boy, you look at it. I think that's one of the best trades going back to maybe when Jimmy Johnson traded Herschel for all those picks with the Vikings. So Panthers got stiffed on that one pretty bad.
Quickly on Ladd McConkey, though. I
got to go on to that. You're going to take it from there. I was still busting them.
One of my favorite parts of the NFL draft is how it's a mirror for college football of what the NFL thinks of a player or your program. We've seen Georgia have a ton of draft picks, but Ladd McConkey being Georgia's highest drafted wide receiver in a decade, second highest in the last 40 years, the NFL saying that's one of the best skill players to ever play at Georgia. And I don't know if people think of him that way right now, but that's what he is. He's incredible. He's one of the best players to ever wear the G.
Oh, good gracious. I mean, I don't have enough sugar to put out for this one here. I mean, you look at all the accolades he won from not just on the field, but off the field. But another thing that's just incredible is I think we've signed like 40 some 3-star athletes, and the normal drafting deal for a 3-star athlete getting in the pros is about 5%. If you're a 3-star, 34% of our 3-stars have made the NFL.
Wow.
So that's pretty dang good. More than pretty dang good. But I just the thing you see about Ladd day in and day out, and I used to talk to occasionally when I would go over there, they have a period where the special teams are working on some kind of area. And if you're not on it, then you have kind of what they use as a improvement period where you get with a coach that's not involved with the special teams and you work on something. And that was a chance. Sometimes I would just stand over there with Todd Monken, and we would just kind of, he was coaching them up and everything, but he would always say about once or twice a year, can you believe the way that Ladd McConkey runs routes? And seriously, that's what they were working on. And for the people that listen to us consistently, if we go back to the week before the championship game and against Ohio State, when they were working that goal line route with the kid that went to Texas now and transferred,
Aiden Mitchell.
And they were working it where he went across the end zone and came back out. They did that every day for about 3 weeks. And it was just the master perfection of utilizing what you practice. And that's what we had with just what a great technician McConkey is. But I think sometimes you get caught up because it's kind of like people talked about Bennett. He came, you know, because he was not – the measurables as far as height, weight, and all that, that, you know, look at his arm, look at the way he was able to do things. Same thing with Ladd, maybe not quite as big, but this guy's powerful in the weight room. He's run under 4.4. He set the record for the 3-cone for changing direction, and he'll break your ankles going down the field. And you can play him at slot where he'll work on those safeties and those nickel guys and work the middle of the field. People like to play what we call that Tampa 2, where they play cover two, but the linebackers kind of mix and match, getting more depth, and he can go in there and work those reads against the linebackers on Tampa too. And he's going with the team now. We know that Coach Harbaugh likes to run the ball. That was his recipe for success when he's with the Chargers. He's hired the same coordinator he had with the Chargers, who used to be with the Baltimore Ravens. And so they're going to run the ball, even though they got Herbert, who's a tremendous talent. And that's going to set up their play action. They're going to be a lot like the Rams when the Rams are really rolling there, you know, with their play action stuff, and the 49ers. So Shanahan loves all that play action and boots and stuff. But great job picking him up. It's a great job.
I love the fact that they traded up to get him. That tells you how much they wanted him. He was almost a first-round guy. I know Kirby Smart would have loved to have another first-round wide receiver that would help on the recruiting trail, but you can always say, look, they went to get him, and this guy made it. He made it ahead of A.D. Mitchell. He went in ahead of Jermaine Burton.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, too, I think. You know, those guys are going somewhere else to get developed, but in the meantime, we not only – changed receiver coach, but we changed coordinators, and they got developed pretty good here. You know, I think the interesting situation is I've read some things about schools. Do you realize that Eli Drinkwitz, who I think is a pretty good coach, but he's supposed to be an offensive guru, coach at Boise State, NC State, Appalachian, now Missouri, fifth year. He hasn't had a guy drafted, an offensive player drafted in the last 5 years. So I'm sure he'll have that kid next year, probably go out.
Luther Burden will be a first round pick next year.
Luther Burden will go out, but still that pretty much shows you same thing with the Heupel. He hasn't had an offensive player taken in the first two rounds since he's been a head coach. So, you can say what you want to about these offensive gurus, but
there were some fun things because I think it was 3-4 rounds. I saw a stat going around saying that Yale had more players taken than Auburn to that point.
Yeah. Yale Bulldogs. All right. Have you ever seen their stadium?
I haven't.
Yeah. Man, oh man. You talk about a place that looks like getting ready to go in a Coliseum over in Rome. I mean, that place is the big bowl and a lot of intrigue walking around it because, you know, the history of, you know, the academics and everything. But so that's a good one. Yale had somebody over Auburn, but I think Coach Freeze certainly going to get some players. They're doing pretty good in the transfer portal and get a lot of heat on him this year because, you know, last year he kind of said he wasn't calling the plays, but now he's taking over calling the offense. So we'll see.
Real quick to finish up on Ladd McConkey. I think one of the things about him is he just didn't look like you expect a top wide receiver. His helmet was always a little too big. You know, he just grinning from ear to ear. He wasn't cocky. He just whooped everybody's butt. And it almost felt like, it's like I'm waiting for this kid to kind of come back to earth. This can't go on. This can't go on, but it did. And he got drafted high. And I was very, very, very happy for him. I was also happy for people that came around on Kamari Lassiter, coach. This guy who was kind of mentioned the first round, he goes into the middle of second. I think that when you get Kamari Lassiter on your team, you've got a fantastic cornerback. And the Houston Texans get him at pick 42, which I think is kind of a steal.
Yeah, I go back to sometimes first impressions or just linger. Even though I'm almost 80 years old, I can remember some things. And once in a while I try to reflect back on it during the draft about your first image or everything like that. But the first time I ever saw Kamari, I was over there and I just asked Kirby about him. Kirby said, "Watch this guy." I said, "He's a great technician. He listens. He's very smart and he'll develop." He said, "He's going to be a pro corner." I mean, that was the first time I ever heard about Kamari. And
right off the bat.
And Kirby knows. I mean, he can tell you, he always worried about Keely Ringo about certain things, but, you know, said he might struggle, but he had so much ability. But I just believe that Kamari has just got that thing in a, is like, if you're getting ready to play a big game and they got a great scorer on the, and your basketball player, you go up to coach, let me guard him. You know, that's the same way he was. If you look at some of the guys that he took and the way Coach Schumann and Kirby switched the defense around, where he moved from corner to nickel to play some of these better slot receivers, or the way he shut down the kid from Ole Miss, or, and the same thing with Tennessee. I mean, this guy, and you know, he used this word very seldom, because I don't think there's many shutdown corners. There's not many, you know, prime time Deion Sanders shutdown guy, but he's as close to being one coming out, just because he knows how to, you know, use his body, use his hands, read the quarterback. And he's a very good tackler too. You know, when you look at our team, everybody talking about we're going to be good next year, which we are, but not many teams had three guys drafted in the first, I get, what was Tyke? What round was he? Third?
Tyke was the third round, pick 89.
We had three defensive backs taken in the first three rounds. And that, if you're taking in the first three rounds, they're counting on you to be close to being a starter. So you got three NFL players that are off that team on the back end. But, you know, we could be better back there because of the safeties we got. And the corners are going to be solid too. And getting Munden back, you make all those comparisons. But that's a pretty big dearth there to lose three guys like that.
Yeah, most teams would not be able to recover from that. Let's talk real quick about Javon Bullard and Tyke Smith. Bullard goes to the Packers. Good to see the Packers picking up another Bulldog, pick 58. Good to see Bull, you know, move up there. And then Tyke Smith, like we said, to the Bucks. Both of those guys were considered a little small, Coach, but they got first three rounds, like you said.
Well, they're not quite as tall, but both of them very physical. And you look at the Packers now, I mean, they're going to have Stokes and the linebacker and Wyatt. And now all of a sudden have Bullard back there. And we've talked about his ability to play on the back end as a two deep safety, a three deep safety, as a support guy. But all the time that he spent as a nickel in the 2021 and 22 seasons really helped him, and it's going to carry over because he can play man coverage on the goal line or short yardage or whenever you need to do it and not worry about being a liability, because he can cover people. And he's just a tremendous tackler, very knowledgeable, and boy, does he love the dogs. Just listen to him talk. I mean, this guy is just a very outspoken person about how much Georgia means to him. And then Tyke, I just got to kind of say, to me, it just makes you feel so good that when he came in here, you know, he had a lot of luster being an All-American as a sophomore up there at West Virginia. They didn't play a lot of man. They played zone, and he came down here. His coach came, and then the coach subsequently went to Miami. But, and then to have an injury like that, which, you know, usually you get an ACL, very difficult to come back and be as significant as he was, but just a tremendous team guy. Just wanted to help Georgia. Great on special teams. I mean, I'm talking about A-plus special teams player. And another guy that developed his coverage skills listening to Kirby and Muschamp, really worked hard on his technique. And, you know, I thought he was kind of a liability coverage-wise early on, but he really developed there. But really good tackler. And he'll fit in good with Todd Bowles and that system down there, because they run a lot of match coverage, a lot of different kind of looks that he's learned how to do here. And just happy for him, you know, almost heaven, West Virginia.
Hey, glad Georgia got him. The guy with that, you know, goes through the injury, comes back. But to your point about Javon Bullard, I had to look it up here because I looked on our TikTok chat page. The number one video that we put up of all the highlights and reaction videos and everything we did is Javon Bullard reacting to his buddy Kamari Lasser getting picked. He goes sideways with happiness to see Kamari Lasser get picked. And it's a spot that he could have been picked at. but he was so happy to see Kamari Lassiter get drafted. You know, hell, it was on par with him getting drafted himself. So right. You say this is a guy who loves Georgia, man, he loves his teammates. And
I thought that, and that all three of those guys came back
half a million views on that video.
All of them came back playing the bowl too. I mean,
yeah, very true. They have to. Before we hit the commercials, we'll finish up with Cedric Van Pran and Zion Logue. Zion Logue, one of the Falcons, as most people know. Cedric Van Pran, where did he go? Buffalo Bills. Bills Mafia, pick 5, or round 5, pick 141.
Yeah, I think he's a steal just because there's a tendency to talk about what a guy can't do instead of what he can. You know, he's Mr. Dependable. A high character person, and very astute at reading coverages and reading the fronts. He can be a solid contributor. If he's not a starter, he's a guy that can be utility, play guard. I can see a big future for him, particularly with that offense that they run. You know, Joe Brady, what we saw with LSU. A lot of RPOs, different things like that. And Van Pran's really smart about doing stuff. So, and then Zion Logue, just kind of take for granted what he did, but he was solid. And I really liked reading the tweets by Kirby about each guy. You know, one little thing that he said about him or two about each one that, you know, really hit home to that person. Because your head coach is saying that, but very genuine and heartfelt. I thought Kirby was good about how happy he was for Zion. And, you know, he's a guy that can be a big body in there that can take up space. And I don't know what kind of defense they're going to play at Atlanta here, but, you know, I really do feel like he's a good addition.
I like it. I'm glad the Falcons finally got somebody. Speaking of nice things, saying nice things about people like Kirby Smart did, I want to mention our friends over at Athens Ford and read you this 5-star review. We mentioned last week that every Friday they bring in it's 5-star Friday, and they put up a review. And every Friday there's a new 5-star review that comes up just because, hey, that's how many they get on a weekly basis. It's pretty crazy. This is from Andrea L. She said, I expected all the horror stories of car buying. I got none. What I did get was kind people who tried to find me a dependable vehicle at a price I can easily afford. Everything came together wonderfully with no pressure or attempted upselling or any unpleasantness whatsoever. Now I have the vehicle I wanted at a great price, and I'm pretty happy about it. So that was Andrea's experience at Athens Ford. And when we tell you they're not going to upsell you, they're not going to try to put you in an expensive car, they're going to work with you to get the financing you want, work within your budget. I've done this. I say this from personal experience. I was in sales back in the day, a long time ago. I understand. I could talk an Eskimo into buying ice water. I was good at it, very, very good at it. And I know how you can not bully people, but you lead them to the right thing. They don't do that at Athens Ford because they don't want to sell you just one car. They want to sell you cars for a lifetime. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to treat you well so that when you had such a great experience, you're going to tell your friends are going to come, and then when you need another car, you'll go back. So if you buy one car there, you'll buy the rest of them there. I guarantee it. And Dave, what is this new thing from your pod?
You know you love some wings. They got the Mike's Hot Honey on there. So these are going to be some honey barbecue wings that your pod's launched.
Yeah, we saw the kind of the early rollout of their wings program, I guess a month or two ago, is in select places now. Now the wings are everywhere. So when you get a chance, it is Tuesday. It is Double Points Day. You can reach out to your local EuroPie, order on the app, get double points, get you some wings, try them out. If the wings are half as good, I mean half, 50% as good as their pizza is, probably the best damn wings you ever had. So check out our friends at EuroPie. You'll be very glad you did. Coach, we finished up the draft there for this past year. We had a story today about who might be the next Bulldogs taken? The mock drafts are already out.
What about those three guys that signed in
the undrafted free agents?
Yeah, we got Kendall Milton, who I think is going to really fit in good with the Eagles, strong enough inside runner to run a lot of those RPOs that they got. He catches the ball out of the backfield. I think he's going to have a good shot there. They drafted Will Shipley from Clemson, who's a good back, but they traded and let Swift go. But a new offense coming in there, Kellen Moore coming in as offensive coordinator. And then Edwards has got a good shot, I think, playing for the Steelers. Just a very good, a very good all-purpose back. And sneaky, he can make enough plays and it can maybe help on special teams. And then Rosemary, I think, getting in there with the Commanders, is going to be a solid addition there. It's just a question of how many, you get in there in the summer and you do all those workouts and they don't have that many numbers. All of a sudden somebody gets hurt and he keeps getting a lot of reps. I think all three of these can make the 53-man roster.
I was just about to ask you this. We got the question from Stick D's. He says, can you discuss your insight into players going the later rounds versus being picked as an undrafted free agent?
I think certainly it helps your image a little bit if you're drafted. But at the same time, you get down there to the end, you got to think about where long-term investment, where can I make a team? It's one thing to, you can go out there and you – marketing yourself kind of like these guys in the portal, where are you going to, you got a chance as a undrafted free agent, maybe to me a little bit better than being picked in a sixth or seventh round.
Share this on the screen. So we get the question, William Grant says, does anybody know how many dogs are in the NFL right now? No, nobody can see this because it's too bloody small, but here's the list of players from Georgia by ESPN.com, and it just goes on and on. I can't get the whole thing on the screen. So from David Andrews to Isaiah Wynn, it is a lot of them. I won't sit here and count them all up, but 40, 50.
Come a long way since that Isaiah McKenzie, the first year Kirby drafted in the fourth round.
Yeah. Just go to NFL players by college. That's a bookmark I got there. You can count them up.
We'll give away a free pizza from your pie for the rest of your life if anybody can read that.
Quickly, before we get to next year's potential draftees, Coach, everyone had an opinion on what the Falcons did taking Michael Penix. I'd love to hear yours.
Quarterbacks going to defend quarterbacks. Don't know.
I don't know if it was the electric chair or what, but I was definitely close to being as shocked as I could, just because you think about all the capital they've got with Cousins. And I don't want to reiterate what a lot of people have said, but you also got to think about, which we've talked about, is the cap space, and if you got a younger player, his contract isn't a whole lot for the first 4 years compared to a guy that goes on and signs a second one. So they got a chance to have a guy around for 4 years. And if something happens to Cousins, then he can jump in there. I thought he played good. What I saw playing for the Washington. And I liked him when he's playing in Indiana, but he is an older guy. He's going to be turning 25 pretty quick, and he certainly, to me, as bad as we need, when I'm saying we, I mean as bad as the Falcons need other positions, I thought it was kind of perplexing. But at the same time, I'm not over there, and you got guys like Arthur Blank and Jerry Jones who really are kind of the faces of the program, and they hopefully they'll live 10 or 15 more years, but I got to think that Arthur's telling his general manager and Jerry, this guy's, hey, I'm not looking 4 or 5 years down the road. Let's get these years. So not putting words in their mouth, but I thought there was I wouldn't give it an A grade on that decision myself.
Well, if Penix and McCarthy and Bo Nix are all first-round picks, surely Carson Beck would have been a first-round pick this year and projects that next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, to me, the Falcons doing that was not near as dumb as you know, I think Sean Payton is a really good coach, no question about it. But taking Bo Nix, knowing what we've seen with Bo Nix, now he's done a lot of good things, that's for sure. But I think Denver's, you look at their history, except for Peyton Manning, they haven't done very well with their quarterbacks since John Elway. So, but they said
watching him is a calming experience, Coach.
The what?
They said watching Bo Nix play is a calming experience.
C-A-L-M-I-N-G?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the calm before the storm.
My joke was that they drafted a white noise machine based on that comment.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you he's a good player and got good accuracy, but I've seen him too many times not make the play when you had to. And we'll just have to see how it works out. But I know he's definitely a quality young man, comes from a good family. And, you know, I've always liked the guy they got out there. I thought Jared Stidham was a really good college quarterback at Auburn and really had a lot of good things going for him. So we'll see. But
they definitely would have taken Carson. If Carson Beck had been there, he'd have been in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the other thing we talked about. Next year, I don't think there'll be six or seven guys like that beside Carson. You know what I mean? And there's a difference between 28th and being second or third, you know, and bonus and how much you make and all that. But
$14 million.
Carson's too is looking at some unfinished business there. He's got a lot of pride. He loves Georgia and he wants to help Georgia too. So it's a win-win for him, man, for Georgia.
There'll be some college quarterbacks emerge this year that we're not thinking of yet. Can a Garrett Nussmeier be something at LSU the NFL teams want? There's a lot of unknowns out there.
Yeah, you got Quinn Ewers. What's he going to – you know, how's he going to develop? What's going to happen with him? There's a lot of them out there.
All right, so we know Carson Beck probably would have gone in the first round this year. He'd definitely go in the first round next year. God willing, he stays healthy and doesn't get injured. That's always a caveat there. Who else gets drafted, and where do you think they go next year, Coach?
Yeah, as far as the early draft, I would say Malachi is going to be right up there. Our safety, Malachi Starks, Michael Williams, just a tremendous talent, you know, a lot like Walker, very similar prototype, very similar. And Ernest Green can't miss to me as an offensive tackle, probably go higher than Mims. And, I mean, Ernest Green, good Lord.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just – he'd have to be in top 17 picks.
I mean, that's my projection, and I'm standing by it.
Yeah, well, hey, you're wrong, so I get it. So that would be Michael Williams, Ernest Green, Carson Beck, Malachi Starks. That's four first-rounders next year.
Yeah, at least. Got some others that.
I mean, if Smile Mundon's healthy.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you got all of a sudden Smile Mundon can really come on strong. You've got some guys, you know, like what's going to happen with Ratledge?
Ratledge?
He's got all the tools and the ability.
If Jalen Walker has a fantastic year.
You got a lot of athletic guys on that team that just hard, but those would be the four that stand out to me.
Dominic Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas, do both of those guys get drafted?
In a New York minute, they'll both go. I mean, they're going, and probably Young, too. I think Young's so probably
three wide off. Receivers taken. Dylan Bell could also be drafted.
Yeah, I hope Dylan sticks around for one more year, but he's right up there. All four of those guys are pro guys if they just keep working. And you don't want to put any extra pressure on them, but certainly, I wouldn't change. I mean, I think our wide receiver room ranks right up there with anybody's in the country.
Coach, I know you follow a little bit of what happens at the youth level, but are you seeing that prospects, if they're kind of a receiver, kind of a running back, that maybe they choose receiver now based on what the NFL is saying in the last 10 years that it values?
I don't know if they're smart enough to project that unless their father's their agent or something, but you definitely a lot of it has to do with the high schools they play, where the need is. Usually you can get the ball to a back a lot easier than a receiver because there's so many things that happen with quarterback throwing it. So you want to, you know, put in position to be successful in high school. But down the road, you're exactly right. There seems to be a kind of theory that we don't need to draft or we don't need to take these backs, because you just look at the draft this year. I mean, it took a long time for any backs to get chosen.
Question from Donnie Burnett on Facebook. Coach, can you explain how NFL teams do all the research that they do and still miss so often on quarterbacks? Or are they just overthinking things?
Yeah, well, it's the hardest position in any sport to play, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know about a hockey goalie or something like that, but I just know that quarterback takes – there's so many variables involved, you know, as far as if you just – go through what he has to do, you know, get the snap from center, read the coverage. He has a chance to fail on about 80 plays a game because he handles the ball every play. And you're basically your career as a coach is pretty much coordinated with your quarterback success or failure. So, but it's just hard to project how they're going to do at the next level. If you look at all these teams, and I think part of it is because so many of these first round draft choices just go to such terrible teams that it's hard for them to be, you know, in the Pro Bowl or be in the Super Bowl. You know, there's not many of them that are drafted first that make it like that. So, but as far as his question, it's very, very hard to evaluate a quarterback if you just look at the dearth of quarterbacks in the NFL right now, pretty much tells you where we are. There are not a lot of them up there that you want to give the keys to your franchise to and say, hey, take this baby and run with it. But a lot of back and forth for sure. I mean, everybody thought Russell Wilson was a can't miss player after the way he played with Seattle there. And now, you know, he's fighting for his life coming back with the Steelers. So we'll just have to see on that.
I mean, college reflects it too. Roddy, how many five-star quarterbacks do we see that for whatever reason they don't work out in college? And Georgia's had some of these too that you think this is going to be program changing and just isn't there.
Where's JT point. Daniels right now?
Yeah, I mean, JT.
Look at what he did at Mater D. What, 13,000 yards or something? I mean, a can't-miss kid. Can't-miss. Injuries happen and other things happen. Yeah.
And then, you know, coaching changes, injuries on your team, injuries to you, philosophical differences. I mean, a lot of, you know, plus now you got agents involved with, you know, the NIL, everything. It's just, it just takes a different mindset to be a coach now than ever before, because you're dealing with so many issues that are not controllable. I mean, all of us want to be in control as a coach. You know what I mean? Just from the standpoint of every little detail you like to manage, but you can't do anything about some agent taking one of your players and projecting them out to somebody else or wherever it might be. It's just hard to,
or they have their personal coaches too, remember? That's the thing that drives me nuts.
That right there chaps my ass too. I mean, you know, don't come in here and tell me you want your personal coach around. I mean, if you want to work with him in the summer, that's good. But you got a position coach, and we're going to coach you here. We don't want you, because all you're getting there is the kind of feedback you want to hear. You know what I mean? That those guys are just positive and all that. But position coach to me is so valuable. From the standpoint, he's backing you up as a coach. He's creating the culture. He's working with this guy when you're not around, and he's building what you need, and he knows what you want. And that's who I want in the quarterback's ear, the position coach.
looking at the question about, you know, overthinking some of this stuff, I want to bring up something from the 2022 draft. So Trayvon Walker, first pick, he was estimated to make $41 million. Not too shabby. Lewisine was the number 32 pick, the last one in the first round. He was projected to make $12 million. Now, I'm no math genius, but that seems to be about a $30 million difference, 28. So when they're looking at spending, I mean, this is just in the first round. From 1 to 32, there's a $28 million difference in what you're getting there. And when they make some of these calls, I mean, the pressure on them to get it right is through the roof. And just, I think it does impair their judgment, because your career rides on this. And if you get the savior, great. If you get it wrong, it's,
I mean,
rough.
Look at the Trevor Lawrence draft right now. Trevor Lawrence, solid NFL player, but definitely not a super superstar yet. He's not Mahomes or Josh Allen. The quarterbacks drafted after him, almost all of them have been traded for 6th-round picks. When you're talking about Justin Fields and Zach Wilson, I mean, it's been dreadful behind that. So it's just really, really hard to evaluate.
Yeah, it is. And again, I thought Trevor Lawrence was not only a Pro Bowler, but like a Hall of Famer, because everything I'd ever seen to that. And again, who you're surrounded by. So, you can't determine some of that stuff, but you can determine your personal success. And if you're in a dead end job like I am, or the dead end, no. If you're not your own boss and you want to be able to take your kids to school and coach their little league teams and just have a different life where you are not beholden to a faceless corporation that just grinds you into powder, that will replace you within 5 minutes if you leave, that all your loyalty is and time and effort is tied up into making someone else rich. Get out of that rat race. Call my buddy Andy Ludecky at MyPerfectFranchise.net. Reach out to him and say, look, I want to kind of get into my own. I want to do something for myself. What is out there? Here's what I can do. Here's the amount of time I have. Here's what I can invest. And he will guide you into something. And most people think, well, it's just cost prohibitive to get into it. It isn't. It really isn't. There's financing. There are people who will help you. There are a lot of people who have money that want to open up franchises, but they don't have the time because they're maxed out. But they will help you money-wise to get you started. So it is a golden opportunity and a perfect time to get in with your own franchise. So reach out to Andy Ludecky, and he can get you squared away. So there's always something cool going on with our friends at Academic Brewing Company. And I want to mention that some of the specials they have Monday through Thursday from 4 to 5, you get 50% off apps. So go out there at 4:30, kick off work a little early, leave work a little early, go out there, 50% off their appetizers. Their appetizers are amazing. And at 50% off, they're even better. From 5 to 6, it's 25% off apps. So if you get out there in the lunch rush, it's still discounted. It's just not half off, but 25% off is a really good deal. From 4 to 6, they have a $5 Kill the Keg, which is a great program. You want to go out there and have a couple of drinks, you know, knock off that keg. And from 4 to 6, they have a rotating cocktail special. So after you've had some appetizers and you have some good food, got all that 50% off food, now you're just sitting back knocking off some of the great cocktails they have at Academia Brewing Company. You're never going to have a bad time out there. The food is great. The beer is great. They have $1 Wing Wednesdays, live bands, trivia Tuesdays, car shows on the weekends, beer and biscuit brunch on the weekends. There's always something going on at Academic Brewing Company, and you should be a part of it. So hit them up when you get the chance.
Let's start with some questions from UGASports.com. Roddy, I was curious your opinion on this one. Bulldog Ben asked, who will be Georgia's top 6 receivers this year? So in that rotation of receivers, who are the first guys out there?
Hang on, I just got a note from Coach. He said his power went out. So that's why Coach is with us now. He just lost all power. So they're good. Where's Wi-Fi? All right. Top 6 receivers?
Top 6. So we start with a Dylan Bell, Colby Young.
See, to me, it all starts with Dom. I mean, not Dom Lovett. We'll start with Lovett, then Dylan Bell, and then give me Colby on the side. That would be serious. or Arian Smith, just for that speed component. That would be good. But then Ra-Ra, I mean, people kind of overlook Ra-Ra. I think that guy could have one of the biggest careers at Georgia ever. So, I mean, not ever, but just an absolute the potential he has could be good. Coach, we're talking the top six wide receivers at UGA for this upcoming group. And I'm having a hard time figuring out the starters because you got so many options. Because I'm like, you give me Dom Lovett. We saw in the spring game how good he is. Dylan Bell's a monster. Arian Smith is the fastest. Colby Young, your touchdown guy. Ra-Ra Thomas keeps getting overlooked. Who are your starters even?
Yeah, I think – can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. I apologize. I mean, I don't know what's going on in my neighborhood, but my power keeps going out about every other day, and they keep doing stuff. So I guess I'm going to have to call the governor and get him get this straight over here. But no.
Hey, Lieutenant Governor is a dog, man. Burt Jones, he played here.
Yeah, well, Burt played for me. But anyhow, as far as the first four, I think to me, you're going to play Bell, Lovett, and Ra-Ra, and then we'll have to see what comes on after that. So who the extra guy will be. But those would be the first three, and then you got Young and the other guys coming around. So we'll see how that works.
Go Young, Evans, and Smith as the other three.
Yeah, well, and then you got Smith's going to be probably the next guy, but supposedly my internet's back on here, so y'all keep talking there while I keep working it.
Yeah, your lights came back on. That's good.
The other question from Bulldog Ben, which cornerback right now do you think would start opposite of Dalen Everett? That's kind of the million-dollar question at Georgia right now.
To me, that's up in the air. I mean, all four of those guys, when you add, you know, the Humphreys and Harris.
Ellis Robinson.
Also Robinson. I mean, not to mention some of these other guys. So it's going to be a real battle in the fall.
Yeah, I'm going to go just guessing. This is I got a 33% chance of getting this right. I'm going to go Julian Humphrey.
I love this question from Shonuff253. Says he's a retired Air Force member here, and I've always wondered how Kirby Smart and the rest of the staff go about developing team leaders and how they define leadership roles. Is it based on seniority, or are there leadership courses that the team goes through?
Well, they work on it a lot. They have these connectivity meetings where you meet with guys that are not in your position group and you talk about some kind of topic of the day where you interact with other players that you don't see as much because you're not in the same meetings, but, and they give them, you know, handouts, and they have speakers come in about leadership, and they talk to the, you know, he has a council of, older players that they talk about things that the players are concerned about or the players suggest, but there's really good development of leadership. But I've always said this, that to have leadership, you got to have followership. You got to have people that want to work with you and want to be led and believe in you, because it's kind of like this when I used to talk about a quarterback. If you go into the huddle and you really believe in yourself and you can get that across to the players are going to react to that from the standpoint of they feel like that you're going to make the right decisions and you're going to help them do what's get the ball to the right person and all that. Same thing with defense, but also in the weight room, the way you construct yourself and the way you deport yourself. And do you try to miss a rep and get by with it or whatever it might be? And I read this little deal the other day, the difference between making an A and a B and the way people make A's compared to the way people make B's pretty much tells you the successful people. Well, I mean, doing your best is the best thing you can do. is measure success by what's successful for you.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. I also like people said, look, I get to be better today. I'm not going up against everybody else. I'm going up against me from yesterday. I'm trying to be one day better. And we asked Kirby Smart, you'll see this, I guarantee you, in the first press conference in August, when he's standing up in front of the group, someone's going to say, hey, Kirby, who are the leaders on this team? He gets asked that every spring, every fall, every G-Day, every chance we get. And he answers it the same way, but we still ask the same stupid question. We say, who are the leaders? And he says, I'm waiting for them to emerge. He says, well, you'll find out when I find out, because they have to actually emerge. He doesn't appoint them. He doesn't, as Coach said, they give them all the tools. They put them in positions to lead for them to step up. But he's always saying, I'm waiting for someone to take ownership, because he knows if he's on that mic and everyone laughs about him being on that microphone at practice and screaming at all the players, you know, yelling at him, holding everybody accountable. But it means so much more when DeAndre Swift is holding you accountable, when Jamari Sawyer is holding you accountable, when Smile Mundon is, you know, getting after your ass, you know, you let the other guys do it. And they're like, oh, hey, because, I mean, you can have an us versus them as the players. You know, I remember a lot of us hating Coach Beggs at Rocktail Gannon High School. It was like, yeah, and Coach Martin, you know, we're just like, that guy doesn't get me. He's playing his favorites, blah, blah, blah. But if Chris Engel got onto your, somebody else, one of your teammates did, you're like, oh, y'all take this serious. So he's always waiting for that leader to emerge and take ownership. And he doesn't appoint them. He knows it has to be natural, and they have to develop that followership, the coach is saying. So it's a great question, and it has led to a couple of national titles and will probably lead to more.
This question from Dog Devil. Any chance Andrew Paul gets out of the portal and returns to Georgia? I think he is important for Georgia's run next year.
Yeah, you would think if he were going to do it, it'd be kind of like an overnight deal where you get in and get back out. I don't think he's going to come back here myself.
But Georgia's done a really good job to assess the players that were thinking about the portal. Hasn't been as active as we thought.
Yeah, I think the fact that they can't go to the SEC team makes a lot of difference, you know, and the fact that sometimes the grass looks greener, but it's really not that green, you know. So once you start looking at it and assessing where you are, and I just think we have such a great indicator of the way we've developed players, the way they're going to the pros, the way we're winning, our successful NIL program that we have, all the other things that help you develop as a student, whatever it might be. It's hard to leave Georgia if you're here. It's very hard.
We'll sneak in three more questions real fast. Coach, in your opinion, who is the hardest hitter on the team now that Javon Bullard has moved on? That from WI Dog.
Good question.
Man, there's some guys out there that make you go backwards, that's for sure. I'm just going to abstain from that, saying that we've got some really good tacklers, and we teach good technique. We don't miss. If you look at a history of our team, we don't miss. When you got a chance to get a guy down, it's very seldom you see Georgia miss, but we also got some guys that can knock you back too. So I say all those linebackers, scary. Javon Walker, I mean,
Javon Walker
is really, and then number three, pretty good too.
The two names that came to my brain were C.J. Allen, and I've heard a lot about Aguero, of how physical he is.
Yeah, he is. He's so caught up in coverage right now that maybe lose a little bit of his aggressiveness, because he's really working hard to be a better cover guy, but he definitely can knock you back.
Ernest Green.
Yeah. From Jacket Squasher, how are the upcoming sophomore interior defensive line progressing? Can fans expect a breakout 2024 season where a sophomore defensive lineman becomes a difference maker of his own? So that's Ja Jarrett, that's Jordan Hall.
I like the way Hall's really developed. Had a little bit of an injury. Jarrett, as we all know, has lost the weight. It's really done well with the coaching that he's gotten here. He's gotten to be a lot better technique guy. You know, he's always so big in high school, it's hard to really judge him because, you know, just mammoth. But he's working on his quickness. Hall is a disruptive type player. And then, you know, we got this guy coming in here, the freshman, I forget how you pronounce his name, 99, really good. Xavier McLeod. Well, of course, it's Xavier McLeod, the transfer, but 99.
Local?
Yeah.
Last question from UGASports.com from UJ alum 95. If something happens to Carson Beck during the season, will Jalen Rashada be able to step in and win games for Georgia? Just how good is Rashada, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think school's out. I mean, certainly he has a good resume playing in the Pac-12, starting some games, but has played more than any quarterback here as far as college games. But I'm high on Gunner. I'm high on Ryan. I think Ryan being hurt really put him behind a little bit because he could have got an extraordinary amount of work that maybe Beck and Gunner got. Maybe we could have cut back for both of them. But we wouldn't have taken Rashada unless we thought he could really help us, because bringing him in, there's always a threat of what might happen to one of the other two, which, you know, you can't blame him. But I mean, to me, it's just pennies from heaven on that one. Now, I mean, get a guy like that come into a championship team. I mean, I think it's really big for us.
Same with Trevor. Last question, Coach. I want to get this from Jermaine. What are your thoughts on Spencer Rattler being drafted so late? Reportedly because he did a reality show when he was a teenager.
You know, I think that guy comes on there and says that. He can say whatever he wants to. He's got these pro guys. They go everything by what they can't go by what somebody did 4 or 5 years ago. You know, I think certainly he was a little immature in high school. There wasn't any question about it. And to have a Netflix show chronicling your whole high school career, you're going to have to say some things, maybe look back. But, you know, he's a solid quarterback. I've never been that high on him based on what I saw him do at Oklahoma. And he's done some good things for South Carolina. Didn't have a great supporting cast, but that run he made is year before last. When they beat those teams like they did, incredible. He had a remarkable, basically saved Beamer's situation, as far as I'm concerned, got him a new contract, everything. But I would say I'd be surprised if he's an NFL starter, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. But he's going to a team that's got, you know, some issues at quarterback, because their second team guy's kind of a Taysom Hill is a guy at the Saints that, you know, is kind of a tight end, running back type quarterback. So he might make it there. I think it's going to be hard, though, for me, for Rattler to make it. That's been as nice as I can be about it.
Hey, Coach, you going to finish the show with a joke or not?
Yeah. You know what you give a man that's got everything?
What?
Penicillin. Here's the other one. There's this really nice-looking lady lives in this penthouse in New York, and she decides she's going to go. She's had a hard day, so she's going to go in late afternoon and take a soak in the bathtub. So she gets in there taking a bubble bath, and she looks out the window of this high-rise, and there's this window washer out there washing the windows. And she kind of covers herself up, and she looks up there and notices this guy's not looking at her, and so finally she kind of exposes her upper torso, and he just keeps on washing the window and nothing happens. And starting to really be bothered, or this guy won't look at her and everything. So she finally just gets up and stands right in front of the mirror, stark naked there, and the window looks right into him. And finally the guy just keeps on, he opens up the window and says, "What's the matter, lady?" He said, "Hadn't you ever seen a window washer before?" That's clean. I had a good old
It was a lot cleaner than I thought it was going to be. I'm like, where's it going?
So much for that. But anyhow, sorry about the but Dane, you know what that means. I'm going to have to figure out how to fix my TV. So I'm not going to ask. I think everybody needs to know. Maybe everybody on our doesn't really. Dane, new father now, third baby. Three girls, congratulations, and I hope that that she follows in the footsteps of these other two and comes over to my pool and learns how to swim.
That's the plan. We'll be there.
Okay.
Drown proof the baby.
Yeah, that's part of the deal. We just throw them in there. If they can't make it, the other kids jump in and save it.
No. Yeah,
I've seen them people do it. But one of my best friends did it with his babies. They took him to the pool. You know, this big, put them in the water, and the kids freaking swim automatically. I'm like,
yeah. The other thing I want to do is give a shout out to David Pollock. His family foundation had that golf tournament yesterday, and with the proceeds, most of them going to the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. But just the outpouring of support from so many dog fans and his ex-teammates and coaches like Coach Rick, myself, Kirby, backing it. And it just makes you feel good about the way David has contributed and Lindsay Pollock has contributed to the community here, moving back to Athens and the way they've helped. And the other thing for me is just to see players that you coach. You don't see them maybe once every 2 years sometimes. But Moosa Smith yesterday, we were going back on his recruitment, and and he's got three young girls that are all athletic, and Moosa was standing there with Russ Tanner and David Pollock. I mean, this makes you feel good that what these guys have made. Of course, Russ, Mr. Barbecue, but Russ was and I'm not getting anything sentimental. I'm just telling you that as dog alumni and people that support Georgia, it makes you feel good to know that these guys that you supported and played for Georgia feel this way about it and support the many causes around the Athens community that they do. So kudos to all those guys that were out there. And I miss some guys. I mean, even Tate Ratledge came out yesterday, played, supported last year, Lance, I mean, the lad McConkey played. It's good to make you understand that everybody's trying to serve and do a good job.
Yeah, love him taking care of the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, one of my favorite charities of all time. Great folks out there. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Sorry we went a little long, but the jokes were worth it, and so was the shout-out to David Pollock and the folks over there doing the charity work for CHOA. We appreciate them. We appreciate you, and we hope to see you next Tuesday noon. Until then, take care.